Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, it's time to get real. Oh, yeah. It's a new experience.
Spirituality.
Yeah, keep your ears open for this one, man.
Spirituality.
You got a question for RLM?
Spirituality.
Yeah, it's time to get some answers, baby.
And welcome, everyone. Welcome to Reality Spirituality. I'm your host, Rebecca Lynn Norrington, and I'm so excited about today's show. We have world-renowned author Barbara Berger just waiting to share with you her latest book, which is called Sane Self-Talk. But before I go on, I just want to let my new listeners know that this show, Reality Spirituality, is about how to maintain and sustain happiness regardless of your circumstances. Happiness is an internal job. And this new book that Barbara wrote, oh my goodness, it's so much good information. I cannot wait to get started. But of course, we have to go through the introductions. So let me give you a little bit of information about Barbara Berger. She has been a seeker all of her life. And in this new book, Sane Self-Talk, just like her other books, she is trying to discussing and sharing with you ways out of suffering. Human suffering, depression, sadness, irritation, daily, everyday occurrences. And Barbara has written 15 self-empowerment books documenting and presenting the tools to insights and discovering over the years that she's been working and working with clients and self-discovery. And so today she's sharing her latest book with us, Self-Sane Talk. Barbara Berger, I can't wait. I welcome to the show.
Thank you. Hello, Rebecca.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just wondering before we get started, who sings the theme song at the beginning?
Well, you know, I'm so glad you asked. My son wrote and sang it and created it. Yes,
really?
Yes. it's funny because when I first started my radio show over a year ago, he's a musician and he's one of those triple threats. And so I said, can you write a theme song for me? Well, of course, it was like trying to pull teeth to get sons to do something for you. And but he did. He created it, and I just love it.
It's fantastic. Can you send us a copy? It's just so terrific.
Of course, I can say, of course, I will send you a copy. I'm honored. And every book that you send me, I send him a copy. He's got all of your books, so it's
okay.
Like
okay. Well, you just tell him that we really. My son also really likes his music.
Okay.
Actually, we've also made some music, so maybe I should send that to you to send to your son also. We can really connect.
Can you imagine mothers and sons? That's so exciting to have this connection with our sons and just growing up together and discovering together. Because I read Tim's book, and I'll be interviewing him in a few weeks. But I can't wait to talk to him also. But let's get to this sane self-talk. Why sane self-talk?
Well, to take a step back, I'd just like to explain to our listeners that besides writing books, I've been working with clients for many, many years. I do private sessions with people. So I not only write about all this stuff, and I've not only been doing a lot of inner work myself, but I also listen to other people's stories day in and day out. So I have a lot of experience and like hearing other people's problems. and testing a lot of the different tools that we've been working with on other people, so to find out what works for me, what works for them, you know. So with that background, I decided that I wanted to write a book about our inner self-talk. That's the thing I've really discovered from myself and working with other people, that we're all constantly having a kind of conversation with ourselves. I mean,
yeah.
We have these voices in our heads,
yes.
And they are actually talking to us nonstop. And so the question is really that I started to think about, because when I hear other people telling me about the voices in their heads and the kind of stories that they're telling themselves, what kind of stories are we actually telling ourselves? What kind of dialogue are we having with ourselves in our heads? And I have actually discovered that when people are in crisis, when people come to me for help, it's usually because they're having a conversation with themselves that has nothing to do with reality. They're usually indulging in some kind of catastrophic thinking. And so what I actually do with people is I try to find out, you know, what is the story that you're telling yourself? And if you're in crisis, what does this story actually have to do with the reality that your situation is today? And so when we do that, when we kind of investigate, you know, what is the reality of the situation and what is your thinking, what is your inner story, your inner dialogue with yourself about this situation, most people say, aha, they maybe don't match.
Mm-hmm. And you know what else too I want to add to that? Not only do they don't match, but and the stories that we tell ourselves, whether they're in crisis, whether we're in crisis or not, they're not feel good stories. That's what I found out. These are not feel good stories. These are stories that I'm sorry. It's like I'm my worst enemy here listening to. Gee, you're not. You're lazy, or you're procrastinating.
You're not okay, right?
Yes.
You're not living up to. Well, actually, when you start to really understand this mechanism, what I have found out is nobody is beating us up. We're beating ourselves up. It's all internal.
Right. That's right.
And that's the shocking truth. But the shocking truth is also the good news, because if we can take a step back and understand this mechanism, the good news is we can actually do something about it, because it is inside of us. I mean, we can't change other people. We can't change things outside of ourselves. But we do have the possibility of working with ourselves. So this book that I've just written is really... It has a lot of good news in it. First of all, it tries to analyze this mechanism for people and help them to be able to see, you know, what exactly am I doing to myself. And then once you sort of get a hold of this mechanism, then you can actually start working with it once you become aware of it. So it's a very positive book, I would say, too.
It's very positive. It's interesting because I believe that, you know, our parents didn't have any information on what you're sharing with our audience today.
And so
they couldn't pass down any of this stuff. But I've come to realize that it's a society, it's a world of what's wrong. We can always point to what's wrong, but how many times have you heard, you know, have you talked to someone, do you know what happened to me that was really good, what was really right with the situation? So it's so interesting to me.
Well, actually, also at the end of the book, I also describe what I call how to become a psychologically mature adult. And I have found out that if we start to understand the kind of black and white thinking we have in our heads, the kind of catastrophic thinking we have in our heads, if we start to see how we're generalizing in situations where we actually absolutely have no idea what's going to happen, how we're making predictions about the future that we absolutely have no idea what's going to happen, that when we start to understand all these things and we pull back from these sort of black and white thinking, catastrophic thinking, we actually become more moderate in our view of ourselves and of life, and of our possibilities and of our circumstances, and then we actually become what I call a psychologically mature adult.
Yes,
you know,
of course.
That you know, like this situation, it might be challenging, and you know, I might feel a bit upset right now, but if I take a deep breath and look at what's actually going on, it's not the Third World War, it's just, you know, this or that, that I can probably deal with it, you know, and that just that in itself is like very grounding. It sort of brings you back to this moment, and and if you can sort of, you know, breathe deeply and take a look at what's actually going on and get away from the catastrophic story you may be projecting, you will usually find out to your great delight that, you know, I can deal with this. And that's actually also why we call our method of working Getting Real. That's why I asked you about your
I
son's
love
song.
That, yes.
Mm-hmm. You know, Getting Real is like waking up to reality. And I have also discovered that the stories that we have in our heads about things are not as kind as reality. The reality that we're standing in is usually much kinder than what we're telling ourselves. So that's also something that people sort of, when we work with them and we get them to calm down a bit and to take a look at what's really going on, it's like they get delightfully happy. So
isn't that interesting? Now, I get them to really, is it like you say, is it true? Is what's happening to you, what you're thinking about, what's happening to you, is it really true?
Well, let me give you a concrete example. Let's say I often have people coming who have relationship problems. I mean, relationship problems or health problems or, you know, problems with their parents or problems with their children. These are the kind of everyday problems that we all have. But say a woman comes to me and she's just gotten a divorce. And she comes in the door and I usually call my chair the crying chair. They sit down and then they weep. And so then she says, I just got divorced and it's the end of the world and I lost the love of my life and I'll never find love again. That's the story. And then I say, you know, okay, so we'll breathe deeply together. And then I'll ask her, well, I know that it's a difficult situation and I can see that you feel very sad and you have a right to all your feelings, but can you absolutely know if it's true that you will never find love again? And just that question, you know, because you can see that someone who's in a situation like that, they project the unhappiness of this moment for the, you know, it's going to be like this for the rest of my life kind of thing. Mm. And just bringing the person back to now and saying, okay, yeah, you got divorced and you feel a great loss of this person that you really cared for, but can you absolutely know that when you walk out the door from this session with me, you won't bump into another man who might be the next love of your life? You know, and they go, no, wow. I can't really know that. So just sort of getting real, we call it getting real, you know, getting real about what do you absolutely know about the situation that you find so challenging. And then if you come back to the present and you say, okay, one day at a time, I can do this. What is it that is actually required of me now? Instead of projecting forever, you know, I'll never find another person to be with, you know?
Well, so let me, but I want to say, like you're talking about, when we indulge in the future, thoughts of the future, first of all, it doesn't even exist. We're thinking or feeling something. We're indulging in something that doesn't even exist. It's not even real.
No.
And the past doesn't exist either. Only unless we want to. You know, it's already done. The only thing we have is this moment.
Exactly. Isn't that wonderful?
it's the best. It's the best. But I want it. You know, it's interesting because you and I, we're on the same page, but you must have a lot of patience, because if somebody came into my office and they're sitting on the chair crying and I've listened to these stories, the first thing I would do is roll my eyes in the back of my head. Like, what, you know, how did we get here? How did we get to the place where we think that somebody else is either going to bring us happiness or not? How did we get here?
Well, I mean, that's a really good question that you have there. I mean, I would say basically from the day we are born, all of us, we've been programmed by, we have all these stories about you know, the way life is, the way the world is, the way other people should be, the way we should be, and so on and so forth, which is driving us all crazy. And as you said before, our parents didn't know better, and the schools that we went to didn't know better. I mean, why do you think I write all these books? I mean, the work that we're doing now is to try to deprogram ourselves and everyone else from all of these stories that we're telling each other that are driving us crazy, that have absolutely nothing to do with what's really going on. And when you see that, again, when you see one of the core messages of this book and my previous books is that there's a difference between reality and our thinking, almost always.
Yeah.
And that is when you've got to sort of, it's like waking up from the trance. We are so identified with our thinking, with our stories, that we mistake it for reality. But when you start to wake up from the dream or from the trance of this belief, you start to see that there's what's going on, and then there's your story about it. And
that's
you
right.
can only experience your story. And the way you can check this, anyone who's listening who wants to check it, you can take any event, anything that happens, and if you look at the actual event, you will see that different people react differently to the exact same situation.
That's right.
And therefore, you know that the meaning is not inherent in the event itself. It's actually the interpretation of the different people.
That perception.
I mean, if we go back to the divorce, you know, there's the one woman who thinks it's the end of the world, but the other woman who says, hallelujah, now I'm free.
That's
right. The same situation, people experience it differently because they have different stories about it. So it's so important to understand that there's the event, there's reality, there's the other people, and that then there's your interpretation of what it means for you, and you only experience your interpretation.
You know, it's interesting that you use the word interpretation. It's the same thing. I use the word perception, and the greatest thing about this perception, this interpretation, you can change it in an instant. You can change it with a snap of your finger. If you choose to look at the same story, say you're crying about your divorce, but say you just kind of change your perspective about it, in an instant, you're going to change your life. You can change your life with a change of perspective.
Well, I would say it's true you can, but the problem is most people can't because they don't know how. So it's really the how. It's not that it's not possible. I definitely agree with you that it's possible, but most people, first of all, they're not aware of the mechanism. So if you're not aware of it, you're just a victim of forces that you don't understand. So first of all, you have to become aware of the mechanism, and then you have to know how to question the difference between your thinking and reality if you want to really see it. Because once you're able to do that, then yes, I would agree, then you can do it. But for most people who are really in crisis or really suffering, it's usually a bit of work in the beginning to sort of shake it up enough so you can see that this is a possibility.
But just like you said with your client, you said that you told her that you don't really know if you walk out the door and there's somebody else around the corner. That's just
right.
changing her perspective in an
right.
instant.
But then again, you can say that I was the catalyst for that. So what
That's
I
true.
Really try to teach people to do is, okay, they come to me and they get a taste of it, but the real work is for them to go home and be able to do it when I'm not there.
Yes.
And actually, one other thing that's so funny is talking about saying self-talk and the voices in your head. Most of my clients, after they've worked with me for a while, they all say that I'm in there. They hear my voice, you know, something happens, and they hear Barbara saying, really? Are you sure?
That's a good thing. That's a good thing.
I say also, I represent the voice of sanity.
Yes.
I represent that voice of sanity. I represent for these people sane self-talk. That's why I call it sane self-talk. In other words, when you have an attack of catastrophic thinking, for example, if you know about questioning your thinking, you can introduce another voice in your head, the voice that says, okay, my dear, let's sit down and drink a cup of tea and look at this story. Does it have anything to do with reality? You can learn to do that for yourself.
Yes, yes.
And that's good news. It really is.
of simple tool, a simple tool. I've gone over your book. I've actually read it a few times, Ben, and I've made little notes on the pages.
Okay.
And
one of my
favorite, oh my goodness, only because I'm relating to it so much, it says, a little sane talk about the body.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm relating to that because I have had this issue about my body not being good enough. And, you know, when I look back on pictures 30 years ago, I was hot. I mean, really. But even at my hottest, I could look and I can find something wrong, or breasts hanging too much, hips too, you know, I could find something wrong. So this, a little thing, talk about the body, and it's only now at this age, I don't want to tell anybody, but it's 57. It's only
you're
now.
You're such a youngster. I'm a lot older than you. I'm 67, so
well,
enjoy yourself.
I read that other part in your book about the age. You know, what would you, you know, the thinking about.
Who would you be if you didn't know
exactly.
your age? Yeah, just think about it. It's another story we have. Okay, you're 57, and that means this and that. But is it true? Does it mean that? You mean, again, but I mean, I would say this about the body. That's one of the things that I've really, really discovered as myself and everyone else. We are so identified with our bodies.
Oh, my
goodness.
And we live
in a culture. I mean, you live in California. It's probably even worse than here. I mean, our whole identity is so bound up in, you know, how thin are you? How gorgeous are you? How many wrinkles do you have or don't have? How much do you weigh? I mean, it's just insane. I mean, we're talking about utter insanity that our worth as human beings has to do with the size of our body, the weight of our body, the age of our body. We're talking sick. I mean, we're talking serious, serious sick. I mean, it's like also with the standards that we have to be happy, you know, you have to be this thin and you have to be this young and you have to have this facelift and you have to have, so, I mean, the whole human race is disqualified from happiness if that's the criteria. So it's absolutely sick. I have quite a few young women who come to me for sessions, and they are so tormented by, you know, the body issues and what will the men think. I mean, if you think that we've got trouble being old, the young ones, I think it's actually getting worse.
It is getting worse. It's getting worse.
I mean, just turn on the TV, man. It's sick.
Mm-hmm. Yes. It's getting worse because we don't know what is valuable. We think this body thing is valuable. We're blind to the most valuable property, and that's our internal being. And this external shit is just
So again, we got to speak up loud about this. It's such a relief when people sort of find out. Okay, I mean, and again, don't misunderstand me. I mean, of course we should do everything we can to eat healthy and exercise and live a healthy life. I mean, that's actually self-love. That's common sense.
Yes.
But this fixation on, you know, I got to be this thin and I got to look like, I mean, it's just driving everyone absolutely crazy. And when you look at the fashion magazines, I mean, they should be shut down. I mean, those thin women, and we're supposed to wear the clothes that those 12-year-old girls are wearing? I mean, hello? It's not working, right?
Well,
so what is your issue with your body, my dear?
Well, my issue was with my body, just never thinking it was good enough or hot enough. I mean, I'm still a professional athlete. I teach aerobics. I've been teaching for over 30 years.
Okay.
And I was 6-pack, 8-pack, but looking at myself, I would look in the mirror and say, no, it's not enough. No, I don't look that good. But but when I get older and I look back and I'm remembering what I thought and what I felt about that body, I mean, I mean, it's like I was blind to.
Yeah, the wonder.
Yes.
I mean, that you would just do, and you were, and it's really interesting as you hear what you're saying. I mean, nobody was trashing you. You were trashing yourself.
Exactly.
I mean, it's amazing what we do.
Barbara, listen, I had people wanting to look like me. Oh, I wish I had your ass. Oh, I wish I had your I wish I had your muscle tone. And I would poo-poo it.
But I mean, we really also come to really one of the basic issues that almost everyone is struggling, and this is, you know, the feeling of having inherent worth. And I mean, this also goes back to our whole dysfunctional society, our dysfunctional backgrounds, our dysfunctional families, that we didn't learn, we were never told from the day we were born that we were valuable, that we were precious, that we didn't have to look a certain way to be loved, that we didn't have to perform in a certain way to be loved, that we didn't have to have great grades in school to be loved. I mean, we grew up, all of us mostly, in families where it was like we had to perform a certain way to be loved. I mean, that already there, that's where the sickness begins in my eyes.
Yes. Yeah, we had to do something.
We had to do something. We had to look in a certain way. We had to perform. We had to be good in school. I mean, all of that, and again, not that you can't have parents that encourage you to do well. That's another thing. But that your value, that your worthiness as a human being is dependent on your performance. That's not unconditional love. That's conditional love. That's where the sickness starts.
Yes.
So I mean, yeah.
I want to say I wrote an article a couple of days ago, and it's called Universe versus Man. And the concepts of how the universe thinks and how man thinks, if you will. Man is interested in, you know, what you do, what you've accomplished, how you look. Mm-hmm. And the universe doesn't care about any of that shit.
No.
The universe loves you what you do or what you don't do. And I gave the example.
Beingness of us. The beingness is already, we're already completely complete. We're perfectly
complete.
Yeah, we're completely complete to begin with. So
I've made a mission in my life to only align with universal concepts.
Mm-hmm.
I'm done with the man-made concepts. I'm only aligning with universal concepts. And one of my examples is people in my life. I love them no matter what they do, and I love them no matter what they don't do. That's how the universe loves. That's how I'm going to love you.
Yeah, that's a very good idea.
and all my relationships have improved because of that.
That's wonderful. That's wonderful.
Not easy.
Well, I mean, again, what you're touching on another very important point, which I write a lot about in this book, which is this, that the idea that we expect other people to make us happy, or that we believe that we're responsible for other people's happiness, that we have a lot of boundary confusion about whose business is whose business. And so one of the things that I really work a lot with people is to try to get some clarity about what is your job and what is not your job. And I mean, this is a really big relationship problem. It's a really big problem in families, that each person is an individual, and each person has their thoughts and emotions, and each person is responsible for their thoughts and emotions. And of course, we should treat each other with kindness and respect. I'm not talking about that, but we cannot get in other people's heads. We cannot fix other people. We can support them if they ask for our support. But the whole idea that, you know, I'm responsible for you or you're responsible for me, people get in so much trouble because of this. So basically what you were just saying, this unconditional love is based on an understanding of I'm me and you're you, and I have my thoughts and feelings and you have your thoughts and feelings, and we're each a free individual.
Yes.
And if we understand this, if we have healthy boundaries, then there's a kind of feeling of trust between us. We feel that there's mutual respect, and we can meet each other in a good, loving way. But many people have problems with this. So, really, really interesting.
One of the things. First of all, I love everything, and I agree with everything you're saying. One of the things that I had to do to get to this point is because I'm really into how do you get to this point? How do you get to a point where you can love anybody regardless of what they do or love regardless of what they don't do? How do you get there?
Well, I think, can I just say one thing just to clarify?
Sure.
When you say love anybody no matter what they do or don't do, when I say that, I mean it doesn't – people misunderstand that. It doesn't mean that I'm a doormat. It doesn't mean that I can't be assertive and say no. It doesn't mean that I don't have healthy boundaries, and it doesn't mean that I can't say no when someone is behaving improperly in my sphere. So
that's right.
Okay, so that's what you're talking about. I just want to make that clear because I noticed that people – who have difficulty with boundaries, then they have this idea, but I should be loving and kind, I should be forgiving. And I say, yes, but that's not the same as saying that you're a doormat and you can't take care of yourself and you can't say no if someone is violating or abusing you. So it's a very important point, this, as far as I can see.
Yes, and I love that because, well, one of the things that I think is you have to love, I know this, love yourself, but it really is about loving yourself first. And if you really put your arms around yourself, and be your best friend.
Mm. But that's really difficult for most people. That goes back to this inherent worth concept that I was talking about before. Because we haven't learned that, that's also one of the things that I really, you know, work with people a lot about, you know, because the question is not that you shouldn't love yourself, but what is preventing you from loving yourself?
Yes.
You were just talking about it before, you know, that your body wasn't perfect enough or, you know, you weren't thin enough or you're too old or whatever. All of those things that prevent us from actually doing what you're saying, embracing ourselves and loving ourselves for the whole humanity that we are. And that goes back to we didn't learn it as children and that we have these unrealistic expectations to ourselves, to life, to other people. So it's like it's a big job. It's a big deal to learn this. It's not an easy thing.
No, it's you know what it is? To me, it's like being in a camp and you're brainwashed year after year after year. Mm-hmm. And then to come out of it, first of all, it takes time. Second of all, it takes layer by layer by layer by layer.
Mm-hmm. And, I totally agree.
Yeah, and so there's patience that comes with, you know, be patient with yourself.
Yeah, it's a process. But I would say, you asked before, and I would say the answer to the question that you asked, well, how do you get started on this? In my experience, and I can see from everyone who comes to me, people don't do this voluntarily, and I never did it voluntarily either. When the pain gets to be too much, pain is the motivator. It's either the divorce or it's some kind of physical illness or you lose your job or you have trouble with your kids or you're getting old. Whatever it is, you have something that's so painful that you no longer can continue, actually, the old way of living. So that shock, usually I say to people when they come in and they cry and all this, you know, that I know from experience that in a couple months from now, this person is going to actually be grateful that this happened to them because that was the door opener. That was the thing that drove them to see me or to do something, to start questioning, to change their whole attitude about so many things, and then they get a new life when they do this.
Yeah.
So the worst pain, the worst crisis is always the gift in some ways. It's really interesting.
I think the worst crisis is a gift in all ways.
Yeah. So... it's really hard. It's really hard to see it when it's really bad and you're right in the middle of it for most people. I know for me, I've had it too. You know, when you hit bottom, it's that hitting bottom thing and you think, oh, God, I'm really done now. But
well,
it is also when you say, oh, God, that's actually when you say, oh, God, I can't do it anymore. Help me. That's actually when the door opens.
Mm-hmm. Well, I do this thing that I know that if I'm going through something that's really, really, really shitty, I actually talk to the universe and I say, okay, fellas, I know that, you know, you're up there laughing at this. This is not fun, but I know that eventually I will know. It's a matter of trusting. It's a matter of trusting that this is going to be good. Whether you know it or not, you trust that it is going to be, or whether you see it or not.
Well, you could say in a way that what you're saying, I mean, I usually say when I talk to my higher power. I mean, you know, you know, that when we're resisting, we're actually saying, when we're resisting what's going on in our lives, that's suffering and resistance are the same. I mean, if we weren't resisting, we wouldn't be suffering. But, okay, so we're resisting. We're actually saying that we know what's good for us and what's not good for us. We actually, I mean, if God is all and God is good, then what's going on is good for us, but we just can't see it. So when we're resisting it, we're actually saying, I know what's best. And that's a kind of arrogant thing to do.
It sure is arrogant, because then you're going to get more of it.
You know, who knows what's good or bad? I mean, I always can see, I mean, you can nearly look at every single situation in your life or in other people's life, and, you know, you have this idea, it should be like this or it should be like that, but it's not. And then, you know, 6 months later, you say, oh, that was what was going on. And I, you know, I'm so grateful for that. So who knows what's good or bad? It's really, really interesting.
Well, you brought up a great, great, great point, and that is no resisting, a life of non-resistance. Can you imagine?
I get glimpses. Yes. I mean, just think, all are suffering at any moment. If you stop and say, you know, like, well, what's bothering me right now? It's only resistance to something. You're resisting this moment because you, as you said before, we only have this moment. And if we weren't resisting this moment, then what would be going wrong? I mean, what could possibly be going wrong?
You know, resisting. I was actually talking to a mutual friend of ours, Joyce, not talking email.
Oh.
Joyce Schaefer,
and
we were talking, and I was telling her that I emailed and I said that I'm still realizing my, you know, I'm realizing my greatness, and she emailed me back and she said, stop thinking about your greatness. She says, that's a given. This, you know, it's like there's something I need to do. No, there's nothing I need to do.
Mm-hmm.
I really don't have to do anything but accept and relax and breathe and know and trust. And, well, I do have to do one thing. Don't resist.
Well, I think also the confusion actually arises, and we don't have to do anything to, like, to prove our inherent worth again, that we're valuable, that we're precious, that we're the children of God, or whatever you want to say. But I would say the doing is more, that's sort of love in action. We can't just sit on our stump all the time. So activity is sort of, that's the way of it. But it's more when we're attached to the activity that we have to prove something, that we have to earn something, that we have to deserve something. That's where the sickness comes in. But if we're, you know, if we already have that idea that we're, you know, perfect, whole, and complete to begin with, and that, you know, we're just playing here in God's universe. So the doing is just the game of it. So activity, yes, but no attachment to the results. That's, again, where we have some idea that it should be like this. The outcome should be like, I should achieve this. Then you're back in the treadmill again.
You know what? Should to me is a four-letter word. I don't even use it anymore. I don't use the word should ever.
Good for you.
I want to talk about another chapter in your book, which is just, I love this. You say your assertive rights. And you're talking about, do you understand that you have the right, that you set limits and you take good care of yourself no matter what. And you took a list of Emmanuel Smith's book, and you said about When I Say No, I Feel Guilty.
Brilliant. I love that book.
Yeah.
I love that book.
Yeah.
It's one of my Bibles. But that also goes back to this about having healthy boundaries, your assertive rights. That's what I said before, this about being loving and kind, yes, but that you have a right to be you. And yes. you have a right to be the sole judge of your behavior. And again, whatever you think, do, and decide to do, it has consequences. So you get to experience the consequences of your decisions. But that's each one of us is our inherent right. And so when people have boundary troubles, when there are boundary violations in a relationship, for example, one partner is telling another partner what they should do, what they should think, what they should feel. That's a serious boundary violation, and that's where the assertiveness comes in. That's where assertive practice comes in, when you have to train, if you're not good at this, to learn to say, you know, I hear what you're saying, and, you know, mind your own business. When I want your advice, I'll ask for it. Because it's a boundary violation to tell another person what they should feel, what they should think, what they should do, unless they specifically ask you for it. It's one thing if somebody asks you, you know, what do you think I should do? Then it's not a boundary violation. You have asked another person for advice. Fair enough. But yes. if somebody just comes up to you or someone in your relationship says, my dear, you should do that, that's a boundary violation. You haven't yes. asked. And I mean, all of our relationship problems are really based on this confusion about boundaries. So learning, and that's one of the things I work with everyone about, when they start to realize what the problem is, then they say, well, Barbara, but okay, I can see that, but what am I going to do in this situation? When this happens, how do I deal with it? And that is this assertiveness training that I talk about comes in, learning how to reply to someone who's violating your boundaries. Very difficult.
I'm looking at you. You know, you write. You say good ways to say no, disagree, and set limits.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the sentences you said, I can understand the way you feel. Mm-hmm. I can understand you feel that way.
Mm-hmm.
And this is really not something for me. You're so sweet.
Well, it's really what they call the sandwich technique. It's a good way. In other words, the diplomatic way of dealing with someone who is trying to tell you what to do or think or feel is to, first of all, to acknowledge that you heard what they said. You know, I understand that you can feel that way, and it's not for me. I mean, so every sentence has these two parts. The first part is you recognize that the other person said something, that you heard them. You sometimes you say, I appreciate that you are thinking about me. And then you have the and. You don't say but. You say and. The answer is no. So it's actually very diplomatic, because it works. Because if you just say to someone, back off and mind your own business, I mean, that's okay too. But it's if you want to be more inclusive, if you want to, you know, try to keep the relationship and make it improve, then it's probably wise to follow my suggestions, where you acknowledge that you hear the other person, that you also acknowledge that the person probably means well, but that they're really off track, and, you know, it's not okay with you. It's very difficult to do that often.
Well, you know, and I was aggressive in what I said, but this is how I do it now. I learned, did I ever tell you about my dog Pancake?
No. No.
Okay. Pancake.
What a great name. Pancake.
Yeah. Pancake came to us on Christmas Eve, and every Christmas I would make pancakes for the family, and my ex-husband and my son, we would have pancakes. And so we gave this cute little dog to my son on Christmas, and she was golden like a pancake, and we could not think of a name for her, but her name is Pancake. It's the same color as a pancake. Yeah, and she taught me so much, especially during her last years. She taught me so much about spirituality, and I want to share this is right on the topic. What Pancake taught me, I have this huge hair dryer in my garage where I sit, and, you know, underneath it, like the old beauty salons, and I would sit underneath, and Pancake would always come into the garage, and she would, you know, kind of nuzzle my arm, and if I wanted to pet her, I would pet her, and then she would walk away, and then when she was getting older, you know, I was giving her even more affection and more love, and sometimes I would pet her, and she would look at me, And she didn't want to hang around. She didn't want to hang around the dryer. She mm-hmm. wanted to do her own thing. So mm-hmm. she would look at me, and she would, and I would say, "Pancake, come here, Pancake." And she would turn around and look as she would walk away from me,
mm-hmm.
and she would keep walking.
Mm-hmm.
But her energy was of, always of love. So
mm-hmm.
it's the energy. So it was the energy that mm-hmm. she delivered her thing mm-hmm. of like you're saying. But this is not really something for me. But
for me,
But I would say, this is what I would say, no thank you. She was actually just telling me no thank you.
Yeah.
No,
but she was
also saying
I appreciate your you're thinking about me, or she was saying a lot of stuff.
Yes. And of course, I only heard the no thank you.
And now I'm hearing this really strange buzzing sound. What is, can you hear it?
No. We're going to go to commercial, and we're going to be right back with Barbara Berger.
Okay.
Call me back, Barbara.
Hello? Yeah. Should I call you back?
Call me back.
It's a new experience.
Barbara, call me back.
Now it's time to get real. It's a new experience. Yeah, keep your ears open for this one, man. You got a question for RLM?
You're listening to Reality Spirituality. I have Barbara Berger on the line, and Barbara called back. Let me put her up on air. Do you hear anything now? Hi, Barbara.
No, it's perfect.
Oh, good, perfect. But, we're coming to the end of the show. I could talk to you for hours.
Yeah, I was thinking you have to give me your private number so I can call you, and we can talk for hours.
Definitely. Of course I will, of course.
Send me an email with your private number. I'll call you.
and you know what else? I'm not threatening. I'm promising I am going to make a trip. That's right, because why are you laughing?
You're so sweet. I like your enthusiasm.
No, I have to make a trip. I mean, come on, we have to meet, and I know that you don't fly, right?
I have this ear problem, so I haven't been in, I have a son in San Francisco, so I would love to come to California, but I haven't been able to fly, but maybe one day, but not at the moment, so.
Well, let me say this.
Copenhagen is a wonderful, wonderful place to visit.
Mm-hmm.
It's got to be in the summer, though, not now in the winter. It's too cold and dark.
Okay, what months do you recommend?
Any time between the 1st of May to the end of September is absolutely gorgeous here.
Okay.
Absolutely gorgeous.
And you have an extra bedroom, right?
No.
What?
No. This is Europe, my dear. We have very small apartments here. So.
Okay. So we'll just sleep together.
Now, we don't want all our listeners to know all the stages, right?
No. Definitely. You know what else I wanted to say? Okay, this is what I wanted to. First of all, listeners, I'm getting so many people following too. I mean, just listening mm-hmm. to the listening.
Oh yeah, shouldn't we say about the website? Let's tell them where they can. And also that. Okay, my website is beamteam.com. www.beamteam. beamteam.com. And there you can you can see and order all the different books, and there's the free download of one of my books, The Mental Laws, which you and I have been talking about quite a lot before, right?
One of my favorites.
And also the other thing I'd like to say to people is if anybody who lives in America who wants to do sessions with me, I do sessions with people by Skype. It really doesn't matter if we're sitting in the same room, I've found out. I have someone in Vancouver, and I have people all over the planet. So if you really want to talk to me, send me an email to info@beamteam.com, and we'll figure it out. Just tell me what time zone you live in.
Yes, and I recommend Barbara Berger. I mean, you can feel her compassion and her love and her energy of just wanting to help and her energy of just pulling us out of our suffering. Her energy just come on. It's just love it. It's so much. So
thank you.
I could feel
actually
it.
The thing is, the reason why you can feel it is because I've been there and done this myself. I mean, that's the whole point. I mean, I'm only doing this work because I've had so much pain and suffering in my own life, and it has really motivated me to try to find out what's going on and how do we deal with this? It's just not the meaning. So I have found these tools, and I can promise you, if it works for me, it can definitely work for you too. Because I've been so fucked up myself.
Barbara,
really.
Barbara, I wish you'd stop bragging about your suffering. I mean, come on, jeez.
I don't know if I'm bragging, to be honest.
But I'm saying all of our just that you're willing to share all of the stories. We are more alike than we are different, and just the fact that you're open and being honest and saying, you know, you've suffered and things have been fucked. I mean, my life too. Come on, who hasn't?
And I know.
That we're out saying it is just.
Well, that's again also the reason why we call our stuff getting real. I mean, the reality is you're all fucked up, I'm all fucked up, and what else is new? We're all fucked up, right? So, I mean, it's true. I mean, that's the short version of getting real. I mean, then we can relax and we can relate to each other. It's also what psychological maturity is really about. I mean, it is about, you know, that we all have problems and we're all challenged, and that if we actually are real about this, we can actually love and support each other instead of having these absolutely insane expectations to each other and what it takes to be a happy human being. So there's a lot of work to do. I think the other thing that I'd like to mention before we end this is one of the things that I've really discovered in working so much with myself and with other people is that the effect of coming from a dysfunctional family, and when I use the word dysfunctional, I mean it in the most broad, general way. As far as I can see, almost everyone on the planet comes from a dysfunctional family. There are so few.
Almost.
Okay.
Almost.
You said it. But I mean, if our definition is, you know, if our definition of coming from a healthy family is a family where you have learned that you have an inherent worth, if you have learned that you have a right to be who you are, if you have learned that you have a right to have all your feelings, if you have learned to have healthy boundaries, if you have learned to be assertive. I mean, who comes from a family where we learned that? I've never met anyone. So therefore, this inner work, this cleaning up our act, is something that we really all need to do, because we all have these traumatic, dysfunctional influences from our childhood. And as far as I can see, until we work with them, until we get aware of them, they mess up our lives now, because we react and we do things that we know with our adult mind that this is pretty crazy, but it's so powerful, the old programming, that until we actually go into it and look at it, we're much more controlled by it than we actually know.
You know, it's funny, this journey that I have been on for decades, I tell my son, you know, hey, I screwed him up. You know, I mean that I know, but I definitely know that it's his journey to take and his path. And we're open and we're honestly talking about it. But there were some things that I didn't know when I was raising
I was just gonna say that I have three sons, and I mean I know exactly what you're saying. I mean, when I look back now, you think, my God, I could have done better or this or that. But it's important to realize and remember that obviously I did the best I could and you did the best you could at the time. We weren't more aware at the time. We didn't know more than we knew then. So I would say it's not productive to shame and blame yourself for what happened in the past. It's more productive to have maybe a healthy regret and a realistic assessment of what actually went down. And yes, it's true you can say that we're responsible for all our son's problems, but it wasn't intentional. I mean, we didn't know better. And it is also, as you say, of course, that's their journey, and now it's their job, just like it's been our job to clean up our mess. But but I mean, it's both interesting to see what happens, but it's also important not to shame and blame each other in this process.
I said that tongue in cheek, but because this is even the bigger picture. This is what I really believe. I believe that everything is unfolding as it should. It unfolded for me. It's unfolding for my son, and it unfolds for everyone as it should in its own time. And so there are no mistakes. There are absolutely no mistakes.
No. How could there be?
Exactly.
I mean, again, it is what it is. I mean, you know that what is happening is what should be happening because it is happening.
Yes, yes. So, listen, I'm cheering. I'm in the stands cheering for all of it, whether I understand it or not. I'm cheering for all of it. I can say that now. I wasn't saying that 10 years ago.
But at this
point, I can say it right now.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, it is also, that is actually the magic of surrendering to this moment and surrendering to our higher power and saying, I don't know why, but this is obviously what's supposed to happen because it is happening. Please show me the way. Mm-hmm. So then we can relax.
Yeah, the trusting is so important. Trusting that you know that whatever happens to you, whatever it is for your betterment. I know that. I know that with every cell of my.
No, that's great. Good for you. That's really cool. If you really do that, that's fabulous, my dear.
After all these years, I mean, come on. I'm in a corner. What else can I do? I mean, I've tried everything else, and surrendering is the only thing that works for me.
Means that you're real, you know. I mean, I believe that we're all, you know, on this journey of becoming more and more awake and aware to until the great day where we are liberated from all of the dream stuff. And so what you're saying is that's a great. I mean, that's fantastic. You're far along the pathway. That's terrific, my dear.
Well, thank you, and I thank you. I want to say I appreciate this time with you so much, and we definitely will be talking again. And for my listeners, thank you for the emails. You can find Barbara Berger at www.beamteam.com, and you can email her info@beamteam.com. And it's Barbara Berger. Her latest book is Sane Self-Talk. And Barbara, I'm going to have to say, can we do a part two?
Of course. We can also do a part three because this is a live conversation.
Perfect.
So just let me know when you want to do another. We'll just go right on chatting. If your audience likes this, this is my passion. That nothing makes me happier than to talk about this stuff.
Interesting. And nothing makes you happier than to talk. Interesting. You know, okay, I have to say one thing. You're talking about nothing makes you happier. That's one of the things that I've found. We're so different, all of us. And I remember having a conversation with a cousin of mine, and I was saying, you know, the only thing I want is I'm passionate about two things: to live to my potential, and I want to be happy. And this being happy means to go through the past and discover and search and seek and find out, you know, what brings this happiness. I'm talking about internal happiness.
Mm-hmm.
And so because I've been on this quest to find it, some people aren't on that quest.
I think that first of all we need to define what we mean by happiness. When I talk about happiness, and that's what I think you're talking about, we're talking about unconditional happiness, our true state, the way we,
yeah.
the something that we already are.
Yes.
And in our society, a lot of people connect happiness with, it's a conditional thing, you know, if I get thinner, if I get a nice house, if I get a nice job, if I get a great husband, then I'll be happy. So, and again, there's nothing wrong with having a nice husband or a nice house, but all of those things are what I would call conditional happiness. In other words, they come and go, you can't control
yeah.
it. And that's fine, you can enjoy the husband and the house, but it probably won't last forever. But what you're talking about and what I'm talking about is an inner state. And I believe that it is already there. It's nothing that we have to create. It's our nature to begin with, but that it's really our unfortunate programming, and it's all the stories that we believe that are like clouds before the sun that are preventing us from experiencing our true nature, which has been there all along. So I don't think that happiness is really anything that we have to create. Happiness is what we are. It just needs to be revealed to us.
Okay, so you're saying that it's we, which I agree that we already have it, but we don't know we have it.
We don't have it. We are it. It's not a having.
Yeah.
It's
yes.
a being.
Being, okay, yes.
Yeah, it's what we are to begin with. Because, I mean, if you say, what is preventing you from being happy right now, it can only be your story about what you don't have or this or that. I mean, because there's nothing that's preventing you from being you right now. You already, I mean, that's it. You're it.
Yes. Okay, I like the way you define that you're it's a being. Happiness is a being.
Yeah.
Okay.
It is. We can meditate on that until we meet next time.
Okay, perfect. Okay, everyone, you have been listening to Reality Spirituality with Barbara Berger. And again, her website is www.beamteam.com. Beamteam.com. Barbara, thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yes,
Send me your phone number. I'll call you.
I will send you my phone number, and I will also send you my son's song, which we'll hear in 2 seconds.
Super.
Bye, Barbara. Love you.
Thank you. God bless you.
It's time to get real. Oh, yeah. Spirituality. It's a new experience. Spirituality. Yeah, keep your ears open for this one, man. Good now.